Hey, what's going on, everybody? Listen to Seggy Station. This man that has a nickname, always a lot to say with no shame. Thursday, January 14th, 2021. Hope all's well out there, everybody. Hope everyone's staying safe. Nick Seglian here. You're listening to Seggy Station Podcast. I got some company coming through today as well. I got Rich, Hot Takes Letty coming through on the StreamYard. We got a lot of blockbuster NBA trade news to get into after yesterday. And I got my man, Chew, Smats the Stats Kid. What's good, Chew?
What's going on, everyone? It's Smats the Stats Kid coming back at you after only a couple day break this time, which is kind of surprising, getting into the winter swing of things. Going to try to be on here a little bit more. But like you said, we got big stuff to talk about. The Mets acquired a great player that I talked about the other day in Francisco Lindor.
Yep.
Who really cares what's happening in the NBA? Because baseball starts in like a couple months, so
saw that he was potentially looking into a long-term deal with the Mets. Had that in the reads last week. So
damn right, brother.
Happy for you on that regard. Let's just get into it. Right now, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Seggy Straight Talk microphone. It's always direct. Time to reflect. As always, give me a follow on my Instagram page at Seggy Station, Twitter page at Seggy Station. We got a live Twitch version of the pod up on my Twitch. It's _Seggy_G. And we got the podcast out on Spotify, Breaker, Google Podcast, Anchor. Hopefully you get your podcast there. Rich, Hot Takes Letty is here. We have a lot to get to in the NBA. What's good, Rich?
What is good, man? I'm glad we're doing this today. I wanted to hop on right after the news yesterday, kind of, but glad we waited. Got to look into some stuff, got some more news. If we did it right after yesterday, I probably would have thought LeVert and Jared Allen were on the Rockets, which isn't the case, so pumped to dive into all this.
Yeah, absolutely a wild trade yesterday. I'm actually really pumped to get into this. I want you guys to first give me your initial thoughts on what happened yesterday with the trade. Rich, go ahead.
I'm sort of shocked. I thought the best offer the whole time was the Sixers, and I thought even though the Rockets needed to make a move for Harden probably sooner rather than later, they would end up making the Sixers move work. From what I've seen, there's a lot of saying Tillman Fertitta, the new Rockets owner, did not want to, after letting Daryl Morey go, trade James Harden right over to Daryl Morey as well, which makes sense. I think there's a case to be made. We'll get into it a little more. I'm not going to say too much now, but I think there's a case to be made that it was honestly a good trade for all four teams involved. The Nets are the one that are a little shaky, depending on how things go. But I think it's an interesting trade all around. We'll get into it.
True. What do you think of this trade, man?
Definitely a blockbuster. You see what James Harden had said the night before and what some of his teammates had said. So you felt like something was brewing. It was about to have something drop. But to see him to actually go to the Knicks. I'm sorry. I wish. To see him actually go to the Nets. It's crazy to see the talent that they have over there. They gave up a lot to get him, that's for sure. They mortgaged the future and even some of the present right now when you look at, you know, carrots they hurt going elsewhere. But I think it's a huge move for that team. It's certainly an all-in championship or bust type move.
Yep.
It's interesting to see what's going on with Kyrie Irving. And, you know, I'm sure we'll get into that at some point.
But for sure.
The idea of having three absolute superstars on your team to lead you to a championship or at least, you know, out of the East. It's big move for them. And like Rich said, the other teams, I think they all had pretty good moves. You look at like the Pacers, they were going to lose Oladipo next year anyways, probably. So they flip him and get carrots they hurt. So there's a lot of good things to happen in this trade. Very interesting.
I started a bell. I'm going to read off the trade, full logistics of the trade. The Rockets received Victor Oladipo, who was brought in from the trade from the Pacers, Dante Exum, Korucs, four first-round picks, and four pick swaps. The Nets receive, obviously, James Harden, the big stud deal with the new big three, potentially if Kyrie Irving does and if makes it back to the team. Cavs get Jared Allen and Taurean Prince, which, by the way, they have so many big men out there in Cleveland, I would be stunned if they don't trade one of those before the deadline. And then the Pacers get Caris LeVert and a second-round pick. I think Rich brings up a good point in terms of all four teams potentially getting some good grade out of this trade, and I do want to talk about all four teams. But before we touch on the Nets, which I think is obviously the biggest one to touch on, 4 minutes before the bell, I do want to get your guys' opinion on James Harden, the way he got out of Houston. This whole idea of player empowerment, this whole idea of this man had 2 years left on his contract, he's still going to be there. We're seeing it with Deshaun Watson right now in the NFL. We're seeing it, obviously, with what happened with Anthony Davis, potentially with Brad Beal. You're going to see it more and more in the professional sporting ranks when you see deals like this get done. And I just ask you guys if you think the way James Harden left Houston was appropriate.
You could go first, Rich, if you want.
Okay. I think it's a tough line to cross. So I think number one, the important thing to make clear from the start is this didn't start with him going to Tillman Fertitta or Silas or anyone over there and saying, I want to trade. This started with the Rockets coming to him, offering him the Supermax extension, $50 million a year, and him saying, no, thank you, I'm not interested.
Yep.
So first off, this didn't start with him going to the front office. They came to him, said, here's the money. He said, not interested. He's not required to take that money. He is in a contract right now, but that's for his next contract that they were offering him. By no means is he required to take that money. He can test the open market if he wants to. And he basically told them, look, this is where I am right now. I'm not loving it here. I prefer to get traded. I'm not going to sign that extension. And he knows no smart negotiator is going to be like, but you guys got me if you got me. He's clearly trying to get traded. But as we've seen, he was going to play it out if he played there. So I don't think it's great for the NBA for players to just be able to completely control their own destiny while they're in the middle of a contract. I do just think it's important to highlight because nowhere seems to be highlighting it. This didn't start with him coming out asking for a trade. It started with him being like, I'm not going to sign that to stay here longer than I'm already here, and I would prefer to be traded. And they have to trade him because you're going to get something for one of the best players.
I agree with you in a sense. I want you to respond to my question after this, but I would respond to your remarks with this. To me, this all started with him potentially playing some pickup out in LA with KD and the whole talks of him even wanting to be joined up with the Brooklyn Nets and then him demanding a trade for Houston with after obviously not signing the Supermax. The only thing I would say about your argument, I think the player empowerment one is interesting. The dude quit on his fucking team. He threw his teammates under the bus. He threw a brand new coach under the bus and an organization on their bus that he was there for and couldn't fucking do anything with. I think it was really shitty what he did to the Houston Rockets fan base and their organization. That's just me. Go ahead, Chew,
go ahead. But I'm just going to say I fully agree with that. And I was mainly talking to like how him initially coming about to getting traded happened and how I don't have too much of a problem with that. But all the stuff with his team over the last 2 weeks and him partying before is messed up. I have no defense of that. That all is super messed up.
I just think it's kind of a product of like where all sports are now with what people are able to do. You mentioned Deshaun Watson. I know we've talked about it in our when we're gaming and stuff. And it frustrates me a little bit to see stuff like this because at the end of the day, you're the one who puts pen to paper and signs this contract and commits, you know, for a certain amount of time. It sucks if you're, you know, in Texas, for example, with them, they've got nothing. They've screwed it up. You probably want to trade Deshaun Watson to get the best of what you can. And same with the Rockets when he said he's not going to sign an extension at that point. Yep. Still under the deal. It's tough, though, with today's media and stuff, too. It comes to light so much more. I'm sure there was a lot of cases of this back in the day, but you didn't see as much of it because it was only television and radio media, not so much internet and whatnot.
Yeah.
But it's certainly difficult to see, but trying to view a different side of it, it does certainly add entertainment to the NBA business. I mean, you love to see a villain, and he's kind of that team is kind of a bunch of, you know.
Oh, they're the villains. Most hated team in the league right now.
So it's going to be fun. It's going to add a whole new element. It makes if all three of them play, it's going to be crazy.
I do hope.
We'll see how it goes. It's just a lot of ego in one room.
I do hope we get enough time to touch on the Deshaun Watson thing because I know that you had a little bit to say about that. And I do think that is interesting. I do want to move on with the Nets, though. And I did want to just say before replying to yours, I heard Jay Will talk about this. And I just want to know, yes or no, if you guys think this is true. If you sign a professional contract, you're only obligated to that money that you sign, not the team in terms of years. Do you guys think that's accurate? But we've seen that. I mean, recently, he's basically referring to, like, Giannis. He signed that five-term deal. And we talked about it. Like, do you think he's going to live out that five-term deal? The way we've seen sports go, it's like, if you sign a contract for 5 years for max dollars, like, you're pretty much just only guaranteed like that money. Like you're not guaranteed to stay on that team for that 5 years. And I think that's a very valid point just nowadays, even though going back then, if you signed a 5-year contract, I think you stayed on the team for 5 years. Like I didn't follow sports as hard as I did back then, but I do think that you see people getting out of contracts way sooner back to Chewy's point. Like you sign the contract to be there a certain amount of time. It does bring up a valid point. I did want to touch on the Nets though.
I think that's a really good point though with the whole, I mean, when you think about it, obviously the NBA is a business. These sports leagues are a business. you are technically signing more into the league. Like, yes, you're to a specific team, but they can do whatever they want with your contract, depending if you have no trade clauses or whatnot, or being able to work things out. So it's interesting. I do feel I would have to go back and look at the stats. I'm not really sure, but it certainly does seem like a lot of guys, like you mentioned with Jay Will's point, are just
it's just what it is
money, and it's not so much the team, and they can relocate, or like you look like a guy because Russell Westbrook's still on the same deal.
He's been relocated three times.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but the weird thing about that is so many people have a problem with the player empowerment version, but these teams can trade a dude at any time and like uproot their life. So to me, it's like I'm not gonna have a problem with a player being like, especially one in James Harden or anyone who played for like 8 years with a team being like, yo, not signing the next contract, I'm good here, like, sorry, this isn't where I'm trying to be right now. Like, teams can trade a dude at any time, so I'm not going to get pissed at a player for also, like, it's not like they're not playing. I'd feel you if they're just refusing to play, but if a player's playing and being like, yo, I don't want to be here, can you trade me? Like, trading's part of the game. Teams do it to players.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. But I think when you're disrespecting your teammates and your coaches and all this shit, I think that is where it gets to another level. And that's definitely what James Harden did, man. And I don't think... All right, let's get into the Nets, though, because that is obviously the biggest part of this deal, because now there's basically now a new trio formed in the NBA. I've been hearing a lot of stuff comparing it to Kevin Durant's Splash Brother trio, and obviously LeBron James had a trio. Here's the thing. There ain't no Chris Bosh in this trio. You got basically three MVP caliber players that are all top 10 in terms of ISO numbers in the NBA. You have guys that in the past 11 years, seven of them have won the scoring title in Durant and James Harden. So we all know that this is going to be a prolific offensive team. Where is this going to rank them in the East? Where is this going to rank them getting to the finals? I mean, that's all up to be seen. We haven't even seen this man in the jersey yet. But I do think it'll be interesting to see if Kyrie can even get back to the team. And if he does, obviously they'll have a trio. Would you guys think this trio is better than what Kevin Durant had in Golden State? No way. You guys think this is better than what LeBron had down in Miami? I would argue no. I'd argue that this trio is obviously going to be the most followed, and it's going to be something to watch for sure. I mean, shit, you're going to be wanting to tune into this every time they're playing. But I would say this right here is going to be a huge challenge for not only first-year head coach Steve Nash, but the rest of these guys being able to sacrifice. They're only being one ball on the court, and I'm not saying that these guys won't be able to make it work, but what I am saying is some of their numbers are going to have to be sacrificed. Something's going to have to be sacrificed here. We saw them lose a lot of their depth in terms of their best defensive player, not only down low, but in the perimeter, and some of the depth, obviously, with getting rid of Torian Prince and just other guys that was coming off the bench. So I originally had the Nets being the one seed in the East. I originally had the Nets representing the Eastern Conference. I think that's still very possible. I would say, though, I'm a bit more skeptical than everyone is probably thinking. Well, now they're, like everyone else, ESPN saying they're favorites in the East. What do you guys think the Nets are going to be going forward?
I don't think they're favorites in the East. I mean, they have, like you said, they have the most star power, but we've seen this before, especially with the Heat. Like, the first time, especially in the middle of the season, when you throw pieces together like this that haven't played together, I don't think you're by any means the favorite. Like, I think it's championship or bust for them. Like, yeah. I think in their expectations, they need to win the championship. But I don't think, like, in terms of betting, have them as my favorite. They're, who knows what Kyrie Irving's doing? Who knows how Kyrie Irving and James Harden are going to fit? So I wouldn't have them as my favorite. I think I agree with you on everything, so I don't think you're going to find anyone who's...
I think this just sets me up, though. Like, me and you, we've had this plenty of times with James Harden. Like, this sets me up. Like, if James Harden doesn't win a championship on this team, like, everything I've said about James Harden, like, you can't give me any shit for it.
Okay, we're not even doing that right now because, like, what? There's two other great players on that team, and you're just hitting it on the James Harden. Like, I'm telling you right now, they are not the favorites to win the championship, and we'll get into it more because of the pieces around them. It'll be a bust for them in a bad season if they don't, but I don't think they're the favorites or who we should all be leading. Like, oh, it's going to be crazy if they don't win this. Like, it's not going to be that crazy. They haven't even played together yet.
Yeah, I agree.
Short season plus practices.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, as far as favorites in the East go, I think the Mets made a lot of great moves getting Francisco Lindor and Carlos Carrasco, but the Braves are still really good and have a good amount of cap space. But I do think they're going to be able to at least sneak in and get a wild card spot, and then anything can happen in the playoffs. But as far as basketball goes,
fucking scumbag.
Are they favorites in the East? I don't know. We haven't even seen them play yet. A lot of the things we're hitting on is, you know, it's all hypothetical because they haven't taken the court yet together. So we have to see how it plays out. They're going to be dominant, but they've lost a ton of depth, like you said. They lost a couple of huge defenses.
Here's a good one for you, boys.
Role players.
Who has the most pressure out of those three? Who has the most pressure out of those three to produce them getting to the finals? Not even winning a championship, just getting to the finals. Rich, what do you got?
Kyrie Irving, show up on the basketball court.
Kyrie, what do you got?
I mean, they all have a ton. I think realistically, the way they get to the finals, honestly, is on the back of Kevin Durant. He's fantastic. I used to say a lot of horrible things, but he's the
best. So most pressure?
I think the most pressure should, it is on him, but it's going to be viewed probably on James Harden, honestly.
I think it should be on James Harden. They were asking it today. Who has the most pressure? It's 100% James Harden. He hasn't won anything.
Yeah, because he hasn't won yet.
And he's going to a situation now where you got no fucking excuses. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, I just think, not even related to that, a few important parts about the trade that we haven't even, like, touched on here. So, number one, everyone knows Kyrie Irving's not with the team right now. The most important part of this trade is I'm with you guys on everything. I think it's a bad move getting rid of Jared Allen. I don't like playing DeAndre Jordan, even if he had a decent game last night. I don't like playing him 30 minutes a night. They're going to have to do some small ball with KD at center. Their defense is going to be questionable. I don't think it was an overall great trade for the Nets, especially when you consider they can't trade a first-round pick until 20. Because of the stipend rule where you can't trade first-round picks and back-to-back rules, they cannot improve their roster by trading a first-round pick until the year 2027. They can't make improvements to their roster right now unless it's a second-round pick.
Oh, yeah.
So that's going to be real tough for them, number one. Yep. I think the real important part about this trade, though, is Kyrie's not there, and you could say whatever you want about Harden, how he's treated teammates, field goal percentage, like taking crazy shots, whatever you want to say. He's there 82 games a year if he can be. He doesn't get minutes restrictions. He doesn't sit for rest games. He is going to be there every game. And I think that's a really important thing for the Nets right now. When you have Spencer Dinwiddie gone, Kyrie Irving expected to return without timetable, and their main ball handler right now is Bruce Brown, who wasn't even getting minutes at the start of the year when Dinwiddie and Kyrie were healthy. Like,
hey, Rich, I'd argue they wouldn't even make this trade if Dinwiddie didn't tear his ACL. I would also argue that you know, Kyrie, the whole thing with Kyrie is separate from the situation. If he gets back onto the court, like, we'll have to see. But like, if he don't, like, I think people are bringing up valid points where, like, well, we'll see what's going on with Kyrie, but, like, he's not going to be around for the next couple weeks, so it's going to be KD and Harden are going to be playing without Kyrie for a minute. So it's this whole thing where there's this whole relationship thing there, man, and sharing the ball. And I know I wanted to touch on Kyrie. I'd start another bell for this, but, like, how do you think this is going to work in just terms of sharing the ball, like literally? Because this man Harden, he goes and scores 30 points, 30 shtick straight games. I mean, they're only the fifth pair of teammates that have ever been on a team where they both scored, won a scoring title. So it's going to be them, not only just two, but now you're adding Kyrie if he comes back. This is going to be a lot for Steve Nash, and I think it's going to be a lot for, when it comes to the pressure of those three, on James Harden to have to produce with these guys if they're both there.
The usage rate's going to be the big question, like you said, when Kyrie gets back. My main point and what I was saying there is, Kyrie's a question mark right now. I don't think if you're the Nets, you could sit here and be like, okay, so when we're in the playoffs with Kyrie, Durant, and Harden, you're probably sitting there like, okay, we know we have Durant in the playoffs. Dinwiddie's not here. What if Kyrie's not fucking acting up and not even here? Like, that I think is a huge part of why they made this trade. And I'm with you. Like, the big question mark is going to come when Kyrie, when Harden, when Durant get on the floor together. It's going to be, is Harden moving off the ball? Is Kyrie okay with not having the ball in his hands as much? And Durant is the piece I'm the worried least about, because we saw it in Golden State. Like, to be honest with you guys, Durant's is gonna be the one that takes the biggest usage hit out of these guys.
Yeah, for sure. But this is
he'll still be fine.
This is definitely the shoddy version of Golden State. Shoot, I mean, Stephen A. said Kyrie should retire, and now he was saying it as like, all right, like I was listening to him today. He's basically saying it like, retire until you get your mind right or whatever. Like, he's doing basically what we see Maya Moore do, where she took some time off and she retired. She pretty much retired. She wasn't playing, so he should come out and at least do that. Basically, was his stance. I'm just asking, like, should Kyrie actually retire? Do you see Kyrie actually retiring? Or do you see Kyrie making it back to the team?
I see him making it back to the team eventually. I hope World Be Flat is all right. Seems like he's fallen off the side of the earth, the flat side, and he needs to get back. He's a great basketball player, but I think the B in World Be Flat stands for bozo right now.
Dude, you want to know the funniest part about that? I heard this morning when they were talking about the trade. Oh, look, in Brooklyn, you got burner counts, honey buns, and the earth is flat. That's an absolute fucking debacle. Oh, man. I'm interested to watch this, though. And I think it'll be interesting if Kyrie gets back. I don't think he's going to retire. I think Stephen A. makes a point, though, where it's like, bro, if you're not going to show up to work, like, let us know what's going on or sit it down until you're ready to come back. Like, don't just fucking not talk to your coaches, your bosses, your teammate. Like, literally, like, what is this dude doing? He's out. He's in, like, a Zoom call for, like, I don't even know, some political bullshit. Like, what is he doing, man? Like, during the game? Like, Kyrie's got to clean it up, more professional.
It was a Zoom call with a congregation that's, like, working in, like, you know, communities that are very poor and, like, trying to help out with police brutality and stuff. Like, the dude's trying to do the right thing. He's just clearly all mixed up and all over the place. The last thing I'll say is about the Harden trade. The one important thing to remember is Durant's contract is up after next year. Kevin Durant could leave. Like, people are like, oh, he just signed there. Like, he did the classic, like, 1-1. Like, he's gone after next year if he wants to be. And he said multiple times to the Nets, this has been reported a lot the last few days, that he said he wanted to play with James Harden going back to the start of the season. So I think we could sit here all day and say why it's a bad fit because of Kyrie and Harden, loss of defense, and I agree with a lot of that. But at the end of the day, the number one priority for this team is keep Kevin Durant on your team and be happy. So I can't hate Kate on them for bringing in Harden, even if the fit isn't perfect, because you're trying to keep Kevin Durant around after next year, too. That's the number one priority.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but when you're going to have Harden, Irvin, and Durant all ranked top 10 in points per direct isolation in last five seasons, literally, like, these are the top three ISO guys in the league all on one team. Like, all right, maybe it might be able to work. I'm not so sure if it will. We'll see.
I think they're not looking at Kyrie in this. They're kind of like, we hope Kyrie's here and we hope we figure it out because they're all great, but we don't know.
Yeah, they're talking about it as an assurance policy, but like, we'll see. All right, let's get into this then. Did the Rockets get enough back? You think the Rockets got enough back, Rich, or what?
Rockets got 8 picks, 4 first round picks, 4 pick swaps, Victor Oladipo. I mean, yeah, I think they got enough back. They're going the OKC route. Like, you would have liked them to see them get like a Ben Simmons or maybe like a real young star or something. Like I said, I thought that was the best trade, but like 8 picks, if the Thunder, I mean, it's a lot of Nets picks. So you're banking on the Nets not being good maybe after the next 3-4 years. And if Durant leaves, oh my God, the Nets are going to be in shambles and the Rockets are going to be making out. If Durant stays forever, probably not a great trade for the Rockets. So time will tell, but I can't argue with 8 picks and an Oladipo back. That's fine.
There's talks of them potentially moving Depo again. I'm curious if you think they do that. I'm also curious if you think they can make the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm not going to consider anything on their teams in stone. I think the only piece they for sure want to keep is Christian Wood. I expect PJ Tucker to get traded before the deadline.
Because
they wanted him. I think they got a good return. I think Oladipo will go to – I saw the report. I don't know. I mean, this is me just basically repeating the report, but saying that Oladipo still hopes to end up in Miami. And if he's hoping to be there and Miami wants him, I'm sure they'll find a way to get him there by the trade deadline. It kind of seems like the Rockets are doing the Thunder method right now. Get a bunch of picks. Get the guys we can. Field a fine roster, but we're really focused on the draft going forward, which I can't blame them for because they had no assets before this Harden trade besides Harden himself.
True. You think the Rockets got enough back in the deal?
Time will tell. I mean, they certainly got a haul, but it depends on what happens.
Rich, Chu, what do you think of Caris LeVert on the Pacers?
Interesting. I like it. I think he gets a chance to blossom a little bit more.
Rich?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. It's a pretty good move. I think one of you guys, Chu, touched on it earlier. Oladipo is... He was playing really well there, and the Pacers have been playing well, but it sounded like he didn't totally want to be there, and his contract was up, so they were probably going to lose him for nothing. When you consider they were about to lose him for nothing, and you're bringing in 3 years of Caris LeVert, who's a great young asset, I mean, I think that's a good trade for them. I think the fit might be a little worse. I think Oladipo's maybe a tiny bit better right now, but in the long run, like I think they made a good trade for them.
So here's my thing on that. I think the Pacers got a great deal because LeVert was basically playing off the bench and then obviously with all the injuries and Kyrie not being there, had to get in there and start. And we've seen spurts of him going off with the Nets. He should be a starter in this league. And I think with just Depot coming back off his injury, yeah, he was looking great, but like he was looking for a fresh start anyways. Was he all bought in the Pacers? I think LeVert will clearly be bought into what's going to potentially probably be a playoff team in the Pacers. I think LeVert's going to shine. I think it was very interesting for the Cavs to get, like I mentioned earlier in the beginning, just two big men. Like now they have Drummond and Jared Allen, similar to what they had going on in Brooklyn, right, Rich? Like two big men. Like Drummond's like already there. He's pretty much leading the league in reboundings. They also have other – there's teams like the Wizards with Bryant going down, the Hornets with Zeller. Like, there's teams that need a center. They have, like, five centers. Like, I'm not – they have JaMale McGee, too. Yeah. Like, why not move one of these guys? I'm sure one of them will get moved if they have anything going on. But I thought that was the weirdest part of the trade. I mean, if you can keep Jared Allen in that and sign him, probably the best part, if they can keep him and build around him with some of those guards that they have, yeah, great. But just weird to have all those big men on the team. I think LeVert will definitely shine with the Pacers, a team that I didn't have making the playoffs. I definitely think they make the playoffs now. And they've already started off real good with Sabonis and Brogdon and all they've got going on there. Their coach is Nate Borgerin. Is that his name? Crazy. Yeah. Trivia question on that. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. Yeah, no, definitely a blockbuster trade. I mean, I guess you got about a minute left if you guys have anything else on the trade. It was definitely wild.
I think it's interesting for the Cavs. Like, they've been playing real well, and then Garland and Sexton have been hurt a little bit, so they fell off. They've been feeling some gross rosters with, like, their entire team out and COVID and injuries. But when you think Jared Allen's on that same time frame as a lot of those guys, and I know some Cavs fans I work with and do some stuff with, it's all of them hate Andre Drummond there. Andre Drummond's tough to watch play sometimes. Drummond or McGee is going to get traded, and watching Jared Allen, Sexton, and Garland is going to be fun. I actually really like that trade for them. I'd imagine they weren't even really involved, and someone just called them up and were like, yo, we need a first
yeah.
for you to make this.
No, work. I agree.
You'll get Jared Allen, and they were probably like, oh, yeah. Fuck yeah, all right.
Yeah, no, that's – I agree. Like, if they can build and keep him and stay with those guards, I think that'd be great. And I think the same deal if the Pacers can keep LeVert with them needing another scorer there. The Pacers have been fired to start off the season, so. All right, did you guys get a top three MVP list right now if we had it? Chew, you got one? NBA, top three MVP list. Let's hear it.
Off the top of my head.
Yep.
Kevin Durant third. Joel Embiid second. LeBron James first.
Wow. All right. That was a lot better than I thought. I thought you were going to say Francisco Lindor and I was going to slap you in the face.
Just thinking about it.
No, I like that list. Rich, what do you got for if you had to pick right now top three MVPs?
So third, I wanted to switch it up, but the case is just, I don't know, he's got to be up there. Third, I had Luka. Right now he has the highest usage in the league. He's the only star player on his team since Porzingis has only played one game and is just starting to come back. Had a real tough start to the season, but played great in the last few games. And the drop-off between him to the number two guy on his team is pretty far without Porzingis there, so I can't leave him out. He's been having a great start, averaging 28, 9, and 8. So Luka's my number three. Number two, I had LeBron. Again, I don't think LeBron's really going to win it just because like he's only going to be playing 32 minutes a game most of the year. He's not it's what we've seen from LeBron in the past. They're not going to run him out of energy.
Still incredible. You see that take a shot, turn around during mid shot from LeBron? Incredible. Yep, go ahead.
They're not going to run him out of energy during the season, and having AD, such a great player there, is always going to put him down a notch. But they have the best record in the league right now, and he's been off to a great start. So I have LeBron at number two. Number one for me is Jokic, and it was a pretty easy decision right now. Wow. So Nuggets record has been struggling a little bit, but Michael Porter Jr. has been out. They lost Jeremy Grant, and Jamal Murray has been playing awful, and I mean awful. And I was saying he's going to take a step back from the bubble, and he always goes off in the postseason and then comes back down to earth, and we're seeing it again. Right now, Jokic is averaging a triple-double, 24, 11, and 10 with two steals a game, which is like small sample size on 13 games, but incredible.
He's doing stuff since Oscar Robertson. No one else has ever done it.
Leads the league in assists right now, and some other fun stats he leads the league in. Offensive win shares, overall win shares, value over replacement, and box plus minus after each game. He's been by far the most efficient player when on the court. And his team literally falls apart more so than even Luka, LeBron, anyone else when he leaves the court so far this season. They've been missing a lot of pieces, and he's been playing absolutely incredible. He's my number one right now. A few quick names. I don't have anything to say about him, but that I really wanted to put in there, and where I had kind of tied with Luka. Sabonis has had an incredible start. Steph Curry, we were over-hating on him a little bit. He's had a great start. Paul George, amazing start to the season.
He's shooting 61% from three is Paul George right now.
I almost
entire season.
Third.
That's me shooting from three.
My third on here. I just had 61%
shoot from three.
Was playing well.
Okay. Paul George has been unreal.
And my last one that I had right there was Embiid as well, who was on Chewy's list. Jaylen Brown, shout out him. He went down. He was playing incredible and was in the MVP list, but then went down a few games.
Yeah, and the Celtics haven't played in like four games because all four games have been postponed. We're gonna get into that after we get into a couple more of the
and of course
power rankings
Julius Randle and Bradley Beal would be there if their teams weren't awful. The Knicks aren't awful, but they haven't been playing great.
True. Good points. I wouldn't have Jokic in my top three, though. You make really good points for him being up there. But, yeah, I wouldn't have him in there just the way they've been playing. And I don't think I think the Nuggets start off really poor. And that's also why I wouldn't have Luka. I wouldn't even have Luka in my top three right now because of how he started. And I had him winning at the end of the year. He can obviously climb up. But I think Sabonis would be at three for me. I think what he's doing for the Pacers – is similar to what you're saying for Jokic, and I didn't expect the Pacers to be good at all. Better record do the Pacers have than the Nuggets. I know it's East and West, but still same deal when we're going to go with record. LeBron does have the best record in the NBA, so I would have LeBron currently at one, but I think two I'd put Joel Embiid because I didn't expect the Sixers to be anything at all. They obviously didn't decide to pick up Harden, which I think is going to be massive for the team that's been gelling and is right now 1-2 seed in the East. He had 45-16, four assists and five steals the other night in that overtime win, snapping their three-game losing streak where the team pretty much was on COVID. Before that, there was no doubt he was playing the best in the NBA, and I think he's the best big man in the NBA. I think there's an interesting conversation, though, between that Jokic and Embiid, who's the best big man in the NBA. I've been hearing a lot about it. Definitely a good conversation in that, but we don't have much for it.
My only thing I'll say, and it's not even arguing it because I don't think you can argue these too much 10 games in. I think there's, like we said, like 12 guys you could realistically put in there right now. But for mine specifically, I wasn't taking record into account too much because, like, the Lakers have the best record in the league. The Mavs are sixth in the West but are only two games behind them. So to me, it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, I agree.
Two games is nothing in the grand scheme of things.
So, I agree.
Like, I was putting a little bit of, like, Jokic, he has 3.5 games behind LeBron, and they're a 9 seed. But again, it's only 3.5 games back, and he's been playing incredible.
Yeah, I agree.
I wasn't factoring in record too much. But
did you guys see that fan yell at Danny Green, though, after he went 2 points, 3 rebounds, and 0 3-point made in the Monday game?
Yeah.
And he had something to say about it, and said he has 3 rings. Mm-hmm. Did you guys see what he did the next night?
Yeah.
29, 10 rebounds, and 9 3-pointers made? That's actually hilarious. I needed to shout that out.
To be fair, they only had 7 guys on their team, and he played like 40 minutes, but still his best game ever.
Unreal. Definitely unreal. You guys got power rankings? Last topic of the NBA. If you had I had 10. You can go – usually I go 7, 8, whatever. Whatever you got. Lowest to highest based on everything that just happened. We had a bunch of trades. You see the standings. What do you got, Chu?
At number 3, I got the Sixers. At number 2, I got the Clippers. And at number 1, I got the defending champion Lakers. And no one else really matters.
Chu doesn't like NBA. Chu's not a big NBA guy. You know what Chu is? A big baseball guy. We'll get into baseball in a second. We'll get into NFL, too. I think he's kind of a big NFL guy. All right. How you got these teams stacking up, Rich, power ranking-wise right now? I think we would both probably clearly have the Lakers 1. They're the best record in the NBA, and they have won all their road games. Interesting stat I had to tell you on this, Rich and Chu. Last season in the NBA, home teams won 55% of their games. Through 3 weeks, road teams are 82-77. So home teams are 5 games under 500, which is unheard of, basically. No fans is definitely affecting the NBA, clearly, with obviously home field advantage, which we talked about a little bit in the NFL playoffs. So it is kind of interesting to see how those standings are affected. What's good, Rich? You got a rankings?
Yeah, I got Lakers 1. Second, I'd have the 76ers. I mean, they're 8-4, but they could easily have the same record as the Lakers right now. They just, unfortunately, had to play all their games with no guys, and other teams got their games canceled. So they've been playing games with, like, Embiid and then guys who are G League guys. So they had a few losses because of that. I think the 76ers have been great. I was high on them to start the year. I put the Clippers 3rd. Not much to be said there. We've talked about the LA teams plenty. This one, it gets interesting. I'll just go to 5, 4, and 5. I think there are a lot of teams you could put in here. I maybe would have had the Pacers in the 4 and 5, but I'll wait to see it just with the new trade, some new pieces there. Again, I like LeVert a lot. I think Oladipo might have been at least a slightly better fit for now. I think they'll be fine, but I don't know if I have them in my top.
Really?
Five. I think
you're telling think me you think it's a slight downgrade.
I'll always be not by much, honestly, and I wouldn't blame you if you say it's not. I'm not gonna like go crazy arguing it, but what I would say is, I'll always take a guy's performance who can produce consistent good numbers on a good team than a guy who most of his numbers a lot of the time came when his team was missing most of their good guys and they were asking him to step up. So like Victor Oladipo's role to me was a little more cemented as like one of the lead guys on a good team than LeVert's has ever been. Not that he can't be, just a lot of times when LeVert was going off, it was like, hey, all our guys are out, here's the ball. And I'm not saying it's like a Michael Carter Williams effect thing, but it's a little bit of like just huge usage rate, huge stats. But he's great. I'm not trying to knock him at all, honestly. 4th, I'd probably have the Celtics. They've been bitten by the bug a lot of the Rona bug and have just had all of their guys missing, Tatum, Jaylen Brown, everyone. It's been tough. I have some questions with the Celtics, just if they're going to, what their big guy rotation is going to look like, how Kemba's going to come back. But for right now, I'd put them at 4. And 5, I'm gonna stick with my team that I was very high on, not the Blazers, but my team that I was shockingly high on to start the year in the Utah Jazz. I just think they're a good team that's been together for a long time, good chemistry, guys that just do their jobs. I had them in the top 7. I think the Utah Jazz are a legitimate problem for teams. I don't think they're going to be like the team winning it all, but I like their team a lot.
That's interesting.
I love the Utah Jazz, honestly.
No Nets in either the power rankings for you guys.
That's a wait and see thing for me. Like, we'll see how Harden and Kyrie look splitting the ball. If they come out, win their first 4 or 5 games, I mean, yeah, they're right up there in the power rankings.
I mean, I wanted to have KD up in my MVP rankings because I think he's making a valid case coming off a fucking torn Achilles and having played in 560 days or whatever it was. He's literally averaging 29 points on like 60% shooting, and dude's unreal. But getting all these guys now, I think that hurts my argument on that. So that's basically why I left him out. Just kind of want to stay in the topic. But I do think I would have the Nets at 5 in the power rankings if we're just going to keep it at 5. I would then go probably... This is tough, but I probably would then go Pacers, Clippers, Sixers, Lakers 1. Lakers are 7-0 on the road. Best start in Lakers history. LeBron doing what LeBron does. I think it's going to matter with standings kind of the next few weeks with what I want to talk about before we get out of here, which is the NBA protocols. Real quick, boys, before we do the NFL picks. Dude, I need to get in on these NBA protocols. This is actually ridiculous. Fist bumping and handshakes, whatever, that's not allowed. It's elbow. I saw dudes hugging after the game last night and clapping. So it's like, they ain't going to do that. It was just like what they were doing that. The NFL saying that they ain't doing that.
Same with the MLB.
And you know, some of these protocols, man, I get what George Hill is saying. I know he needs to not say shit like that because you're making mad money, like sacrifice a little bit, like everyone's sacrificing right now. But like, basically the NBA is setting up jail. Like, house arrest that plays basketball. I mean, you want to get right down to it. The reason why there's an issue, though, is because people like George Hill because, you know, I want to do what I want. Well, then fucking opt out. Like, that's my problem with George Hill. The NBA gave these players the opportunity to opt out if they're not down with the rules, protocols, and scared of the virus, just like we saw in the NFL, just like we saw in the MLB, just like we're seeing in the NHL that started yesterday. Here's the deal. If you're opting in, then you have to abide by the rules. And the rules are getting cranked up only because mad dudes are testing positive. Since January 6th, 16 new positive tests in the NBA, and they're postponing games on a rapid rate where if they can't get it fixed pretty soon, they're talking about having potentially another pause. So I don't understand why these athletes say shit like that when it's like, bro, just follow the protocols. I do think some of the protocols are out of line. in the NBA, I think Adam Silver and the NBA PA take a little bit of a hit with how things have gone because they're the ones that set these protocols and they're clearly not working. So now they have to go back and kind of amend them. Hopefully they start working better. There's clearly an issue in the NBA though, and I'm just wondering if they can get it under control before it's too late. Chew. Any comment on George Hill?
Yeah, you NBA get paid protocols. Millions of dollars to play a game. Everyone has to make adjustments. We've all made adjustments. Richard's been working from home since this thing began. We had to take protocols at work, do certain things, follow the rules. Like you said, if you don't like it, opt out. You're a grown man. Yeah, grown men usually make responsible decisions and say responsible things, so start acting like it and learn how to hit a fucking free throw.
No, I agree. Like,
yeah, that was coming.
Not only opt out, but the problem I have with, oh, I'm a grown man, I'm going to do what I want. That's exactly why 400,000 people have died. Because people are out just like, oh, I'm doing what I want to fucking want to do.
Yeah, thanks,
and
asshole.
You're fucking us over. The people that are acting like that and not following the protocols that are set in place, not only in the NBA, but everywhere else you go right now, your fucking local gas station, just follow them. I see people all the time not. That's part of the, oh, I'm going to do what I want to fucking do. All right, big guy, tough guy. I think you might have an issue, though, in the NBA. Rich, I'm curious if you think there's going to be a problem in the NBA.
I mean, to look at it from both sides, number one, if Indeed came to me and said, hey, you can't do this, 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 and this, I know I'd be really tight, so that's its side of it. I'd be like, nah, that's bullshit. You can't tell me what I could do. The flip side of that is I work for a company that pays me a normal salary. He works for a multi-billion dollar organization where he gets paid millions and millions. And I hate the argument of like, shut up, you get paid a lot of money. That's not what I'm saying. The point of what I'm saying is more so like, dude, you, the players, and everyone are what makes this multi-billion dollar organization float for every team, for every owner, everyone that works for every team, writers, all down the line. Like, it's not just like I can do what I want, fuck you. It's like, no. If it just costed you your job, then that would be fine. If it was like you getting it, then like, all right, man, whatever, George Hill's gone. Like, that's not it. They're worried about the other team, your teammates. Like, it's much more than that. So it's like, I know you guys said it. This isn't arguing anything you guys said, but it's kind of a selfish viewpoint right there. It's like, yeah, dude, we're not worried about you. We're worried about everyone. That being said, some of the rules are ridiculous. I think the rules they put in place, honestly, even though they suck, are the rules they needed to make with the, not the court stuff, like the people like, look, go to the grocery store, go home, don't go out, don't go to strip clubs, don't go to bars, don't go out to dinner for no reason. That I agree with. The petty rules, like, don't dap each other up or say what up after the game. That's dumb
Rich,
to me because it's like, dude, they just played all game.
Of course, yeah, that's ridiculous. That's like you can't do a jersey swap in the NFL. Absolutely stupid after playing the whole game. But, Rich, I just need to ask you, did the NBA make a mistake here by allowing dudes to go out to a restaurant with one guest on road? Like, some of the things that they had set in place were protocols, but clearly not strong enough because they're having a downright fucking outbreak, if you want to just be honest. Now it's the next 2 weeks. They must basically, staff must remain in the residence hall in the home market except for team activities. Road trips prohibited leaving the hotel and having guests. Pre-game meeting limited to 10 minutes in the locker room. I mean, this is about as strict as it can get, bro. Like, it can't get much stricter. This is, to me, Adam Silver saying, bro, if this doesn't work, we're going to have to take a break. Like, I don't, Adam Silver's already taken enough heat. And I don't think he's going to take much more, to be honest, with how things are going in the NBA. I'm a huge NBA fan. I obviously don't want them to shut down, but I think this is getting real sketchy. When you got Aaron Gordon saying it's janky, when you got some of these players, not George Hill, saying like, yo, what the fuck is going on? When you got coaches like Stan Van Gundy being like, yo, I'm 61 years old. I'm scared as shit. Zion just went into the COVID protocol. Like, something's getting going here in the NBA where it's not the NFL. They're not playing once a week. And this leads into the NFL perfectly. I'm going to get the picks here. But, you know, just have you know, all this going on in the NBA, NHL coming back, all these positive tests in the NBA, Schefter's putting no positive tests in the NFL, all games ago, everyone's ago, people coming back off the COVID list. It seems like the NFL's got everything squared away just at the right time. It's actually kind of crazy when you think about it.
Well, it's a little different, too, though, in that sense, just to touch on that. I mean, first off, the NBA is such close contact indoors and stuff. It's the beginning of the season. Guys, I feel like we've touched on, clearly don't really care about the protocols and whatnot. The NFL we're talking about now, they haven't had many positive tests. I think that guy who was about to play for first time ever play for two teams in the playoffs, he actually just went on the COVID list, unfortunately. Vandeer, whatever his name is.
Yeah, which, by the way, that's bullshit, and he would go on the COVID list.
Yeah.
That's, I know. No, he shouldn't be allowed to do that.
fucking stupid, I think. But yeah.
Yeah, it's just whole other argument. Yeah, exactly. But I think it also like plays into effect. Look at the teams you have left in the playoffs now for the NFL. All these people are so close to like making it one step closer to the Super Bowl. Everyone is bought in so hard at this point. So
I agree.
It's a little bit different. There's different mindsets and mentalities right now.
I agree with that. But I think it is important to mention that there's no new positives. Like
positives it is great in the NFL. To see, exactly.
Especially I do want to get into the game picks. When you look at the AFC in terms of age of quarterbacks left, no one over the age of 25 and younger. Then when you go and look at the NFC, you got Tom Brady, who's what, going to be 43, Drew Brees, 41, Aaron Rodgers, 37, and Jared Goff is the old man of the group at 26. So it's interesting to look at that statistic there before we get into the picks. What is the first game that is happening? I want to try and do it in order. Do have it here somewhere.
I believe it's the Rams-Packers.
Sure is. Saturday, 4:35, Rams-Packers. What do you guys got?
I mean, it's hard to pick the Rams at that. Like, they could definitely win with that defense, but it's hard for me to come on here and pick either Jared Goff or whoever the hell their backup's going to be after the other dude got rushed to the emergency room over Aaron Rodgers. And I mean, the fact of the matter is, people say that all the time, but, like, Aaron Rodgers isn't playing against the other quarterback, so Aaron Rodgers has to go up against that Rams D, which is dominant and could absolutely give him problems, but I'm not going to sit here and expect Aaron Rodgers to give up too many points to that defense or for Jared Goff or whoever's quarterbacking to outscore him, so I'm going to pick the Packers, but the D could cause some problems to the Rams.
Yeah, I mean,
Rich got Packers. What do you got?
100%. You
got
to pick Packers in this one. Goff's hand is still beat up. He just had that surgery. He might still have a couple rods in his thumb or whatever. So we'll have to see how he's able to throw the ball downfield. He had a couple good throws last week. He also had a couple bad throws last week. You're going up against probably the most talented quarterback of all time, in Aaron Rodgers. So it's so hard to pick against the Packers here. They have a great offense, obviously. Their defense is pretty good. It's going to be a good matchup, but I'm going Packers by at least two touchdowns.
So, yeah, I think this matchup is going to be interesting, though. Devontae Adams and Jalen Ramsey. When you look at what Jalen Ramsey has done to pretty much every stud wide receiver in the NFL, it's locked them up. I mean, Amari Cooper, 7 receptions, 57 yards. That was the best game. He held Stephon Diggs to 1 reception for 4 yards and a touchdown. Like, Stephon Diggs, who leads the league in receptions and yards. Terry McLaurin to 0, DK Metcalf to 0 in week 10. DK Metcalf 3 for 33 last week. DeAndre Hopkins 2 to 28. The interesting stat for this for me is when you look at how much he's targeted. It's like 149 times that Devontae Adams has targeted. The next closest on the team is 86. Devontae Adams missed 2 games. So there's no way that he's just not going to throw at him. It's Rodgers and Devontae Adams. It's going to be great, dude. I think Jalen Ramsey, for the first time, will get exposed. I have the Packers winning this game. I think Rams D is for real, but I think Aaron Donald bang up is hurt. I think quarterback position banged up is tough as well. I'm taking the Packers in this game. The Packers have the where are they at here? They have 31.8 points per game, which leads the NFL, and since the last 4 weeks, they've only allowed 16 points in 4 of their last 5 games, only allowing 23.1 per game on the season. Not able to put up a lot of points to the Rams. I think the Packers will put up points, even with the matchup in Jalen Ramsey and Devontae Adams. I got the Packers.
One nugget I just want to get in there on all your stats with the wide receivers he shut down.
Yep.
Obviously, that's incredible, but if you look at it, all the ones that he's really like shutting down, per se, are the more athletically gifted ones. So you had like Nuke Hopkins on there. You have DK Metcalf twice. You have Stephon Diggs, who's so fast. But the difference between a guy like Amari Cooper and Devontae Adams is their route running. So I think it's going to be a very technical battle on the edge between those two. Is he going to be able to stay in front of him? Devontae Adams probably has some of the best route running in the league, if you go and look at the tape. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they match up.
For sure. I mean, Rodgers in his past 4 games, 293.8 passing yards. He's got 9 TDs, only 2 interceptions. He had 48 TDs on the year, only 5 interceptions. Talked about him being an MVP. I saw his numbers compared to last year. He had 4,000-something yards last year. He's like 4,600 or whatever, 4,600 this year. But he had like 26 touchdowns and like 10 picks or whatever it was. This year he's up to 48 and 5. I mean, it's just crazy. I don't see them losing this game at home. Also, that little bit of an advantage for them at home where they've pretty much been a dominant squad at home, not only in the regular season but the playoffs. I think it'll be Packers for sure in this game. Anything else on this game? Packers, Rams?
No.
You guys think Jared Goff's going to play?
Yeah, he's definitely playing.
He was, like, salty that he didn't get to play. I'm like, bro, you looked like shit. You only completed 9 passes. I was like, the other guy.
That's the competitor in you. I feel like you'd probably be in the same spot, too, if you're a franchise quarterback for that team. You're banged up, and you want to be out there playing in the playoffs. So I get that, but also, yeah, he did not look healthy. All
right, let's get into this game, then. I think going to be the most electric game. We'll see if Lamar Jackson can handle the weather, though. He'll be weary of the weather because he's never played in the snow, apparently, and there's 60% chance of there being snow in Buffalo this week. So I just wanted to get your guys' take on this game. What do you guys got, Baltimore or Buffalo?
I mean, I feel like the first thought is initially he's probably one of the most best-equipped quarterbacks to play in the snow. Granted, it could probably can only make the throwing worse. Not that his throwing is as awful as people make it out to be, but it's not on Josh Allen's level. But he's able to use his legs. But I think at the end of the day, it's still going to play into the favor. I think the Bills are the better team, and it'll play into the favor of them. Josh Allen, just more of a dual-threat quarterback. And like I was saying, like the snow, rain games, you think more of a run game on the ground than airing it out. But Josh Allen could do both those things well. He might not be Lamar running the ball, but he can do it, and he could certainly throw the ball a lot better, has some better options for receivers on offense. If it truly turns into an all-ground battle, the Ravens could definitely win because they have the better running backs, and Lamar's the better running back, but I like the Bills overall.
Yep, good point, Rich. What do you got, Chu?
I think I'm going to go with the table breakers and Bills Mafia here. Hopefully it's a snow game. It'll be fun to watch. Snow playoff games are always so fun. It adds a whole new element to it for some reason. But I think Rich hit the nail on the head. Both teams are equipped for this game, really. Lamar hasn't played in the snow, but they have a great run attack. It's not as good as they were last year when they led the league, but they still got some great backs. You got Mark the Shark Andrews at tight end. I think it has all the makings for a really good game again, but I'm going to go with the Bills on this one. Their defense has been playing real well recently, so let's go Bills.
All right, so you know how big of a Bills guy I've been this year. I got the Bills making the Super Bowl. This game does scare the shit out of me, though, because I think the Ravens are the hottest team in the league right now. When you go look at since week 12, the Bills are 7-0. Josh Allen, 71.2 completion percentage, which this man's been completing a ton of his passes this year. It's unreal. And 22 total touchdowns. Well, Lamar Jackson, 6-0, 67.7 completion percentage and 16 touchdowns. So he's not far behind. Heading into the playoffs, 12 QBs drafted in the first round had 0 playoff wins. That is no longer the case since Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Baker Mayfield all got a playoff win in the division in the wild card weekend. So I do think there's some very good monkey off your back for that as well. The snow game, I think, will be the impact in terms of maybe for the Ravens. But like Rich said, if it turns into a run attack, it could be scary. I will say that the Buffalo Bills versus top 10 defenses this season are 5-0. They're scoring 29.8 points per game, and Josh Allen has had 13 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. Ravens defense currently ranks 7th in the NFL, so this will be another matchup for them, which would be difficult. Zach Moss going down, like Rich mentioned, I think is a big loss. He's a running back that was there all year, a rookie. He's not able to play. They brought in Devontae Freeman. We'll see if he's going to even be playing. I think he passed protocol, but Devin Singletary is going to have to be the workload. We'll see if he's able to do that. I think it's going to be
Devontae Freeman.
Yeah, bro. Devontae Freeman off the Giants.
I didn't even know the Giants dropped him.
Yep, bro. On waivers. Yep. Covered that last week. So he might be backing up Devin Singletary if he clears protocols. If not, it's going to be Devin Singletary, a big workhorse. Anyway, it's going to be a Josh Allen, a Stephon Diggs game if they're going to win it. And the defense is going to have to step up against Lamar Jackson. I'm hoping that happens because I'm still picking the Bills to win this game. But I am certainly worried that it'll get done just with everything I just said there.
Devontae going to a Super Bowl contender out of nowhere. Went from the Giants to no job to Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, for sure. Wavered. Yeah. It'll be interesting. I mean, Lamar Jackson is unreal. He's rushing at unreal rate. The schemes that he has because of it. And if he's throwing it, I mean, if it's not snowing, he's able to throw it or whatever. If it's snowing, you can still throw. So, I mean, we'll see, man. Definitely a little worried about that. All right, let's just start the bell and get into this. Browns, Chiefs. You guys give the Browns any chance in this game?
I want to pick the Browns so bad because I've been on this podcast saying that the Browns could be one of the better teams to beat the Chiefs just because of the run game, decent defense, and I don't know. I don't know how I sit on here and pick the Browns over the Chiefs, but I can't do that. But I'll be rooting for them. I'll tell you that. I got the Chiefs winning. I'm not going to pick them.
Such a fucking weak take.
They've been great all year, but I think the Browns could put up a fight and it could be a really close game. I'm not giving them no chance, but I can't pick them to win.
Chew, what do you got?
Corvette. I wish I could pick the Browns like you just said. I have the Chiefs win the Super Bowl. I came on and predicted that the other day. But the only way they do win this game, honestly, is if they control that run game. They need to have at least three drives consume up at least 8-9 minutes of clock time. You need to not give Patrick Mahomes the ball. You need to not turn it over. You need to just run it down their throats and just – it's got to be a physical, hard battle. I mean, their defense has played better as of late. You need a huge game out of Myles Garrett. They're getting – what's his name back?
Denzel Ward.
Yep, Denzel Ward, who's played great this year. But still, when you look at that high-powered Chiefs offense – you got a brilliant mind in Andy Reid. You got Patrick Mahomes leading the squad. You got Tyreek Hill. You got Travis Kelce in the middle. It's such a scary opponent. And they're going to fight, but they're not going to win. It's going to be Chiefs all the way.
So I see it a little bit.
There's something to having almost no chance and, like, I don't know.
They had no chance last week, though. I said they had no chance last week against the
having won a playoff game. So, I mean, hey, they got nothing to lose out there. Like, I've heard, like, Mike Greenberg say it the other day. Like, every team has the same thing to lose, a playoff game. So, like, no, the Browns have nothing to lose. The Chiefs are expected to make it to the Super Bowl. The Browns aren't expected to be here.
All right, yeah, so I do think rust and potentially the 21 days off can be a factor, but I still don't think the Browns win this game. I think the Chiefs win it pretty handily. Getting some of these guys back, getting Kevin Stefanski back should be a boost, but you're going up against the Chiefs. Like you said, the only way you're going to win it is if you control the clock, control the ground game, and don't turn the ball over. Just not so sure Baker Mayfield's going to be able to do that. He had one great playoff game. All the credit to him. All the credit to the Cleveland fan base for getting a playoff win. But I'm kind of with Chase Claypool here as much as he probably shouldn't have been saying
shut
that.
Shut the fuck up with that.
I think they're going to get clapped.
Claypool's
the last person that should be saying it, but
actually,
I think they're going to
the
get clapped.
The Browns are going to get clapped next week. Okay, Claypool, shut up.
Yeah, like,
you got
thought
clapped.
They were going to get clapped against them, and they beat them. Shut up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, shut your mouth, and you should be in the gym training, brother.
So, interesting comments from Claypool, but I do think the Browns get clapped. If the Chiefs win this game, by the way.
I want to check the numbers. I don't think Baker's turned it over that much.
I got the Browns covering.
Go ahead, check the. Yeah, it's 10 points, which
Baker only. I still think
the Chiefs cover that though. I think they win. I think they win by 13.
Yeah, they win by 2.
But here's an interesting stat. If they win this game, Andy Reid would be only the second coach. Well, he'd be the only coach to do it with two different teams. The Eagles back in 2002, 2003. Yeah, here it is. If the Kansas City Chiefs win their divisional game, they become the first team in history to host three straight AFC championship games. The only team to do that in the NFC was the 2002 through 2004 Eagles, both coached by Andy Reid. So it'll be interesting to see the legacy conversation for Andy Reid if they do win this game, if they do make it back to the Super Bowl, if they do go back-to-back Super Bowls. This man's been an incredible coach. In the last 24 games since 1950, only Patrick Mahomes is behind Jim McMahon in 84 through 87, who went 24-0. Patrick Mahomes is 23-1 in his past 24 games. It's better than Peyton Manning, tied with Peyton Manning, tied with a couple of Tom Brady's. So it's up there with, obviously, the GOATs of the GOATs. There's only one GOAT, but he's making a case for it. I think if they lost this game, it'd be huge for not only Patrick Mahomes' legacy, but just the whole Chiefs hype train where they obviously projected to at least make it to the Super Bowl. I don't see them losing to the Browns. I don't see Baker Mayfield having a type of game where he can outduel Pat Mahomes, and I think that's the only way they'd win, right? I mean, besides them being able to run it, you're still going to have to score it. And unless they run it in every fucking time, which I guess is possible, Baker Mayfield's going to have to make some type of plays. I'm not saying he can't, but I'm not saying I don't think he's going to make enough. All right, boys. Then the biggest game of the week, the History Channel game. Who you got? You got the Bucks or the Saints? Let's hear it, Rich.
So I feel like there's going to be zero football insight and logic behind this. I'm just looking at this solely on narrative-based and thinking the Saints beat the Bucks twice this year. The Bucks are due for a win. You could argue the Saints have their number. I always believe in Tom Brady, LeBron James, people who show me I should believe in them when it all matters. And I have not watched football intently for as long as some people or you guys, like going back like 10 years. I was watching Super Bowls, but not every year. So just the last few years, watching really intently, Drew Brees and the Saints have certainly not been a clutch team when it matters in the playoffs. They dominate in the regular season, but they have had some brutal postseason moments, some at the hands of the refs and not their own fault, but nonetheless some brutal postseason moments. And I'm just going to pick Tom Brady, the team that I feel is due for a win, the guy I feel gets a win when he needs it. I feel like the teams are very similarly talented. The Saints probably have the better defense. Maybe the Bucks having a little bit of the better run defense. They both have very talented weapons on offense. I don't see much of a difference in dissecting both of their teams, so I'm just going to go with some of the narrative-based things there and go with Tom Brady and the Bucks.
All right. Rich got the Bucks. Chew, what do you got?
Oh, this is going to be a good one, I think. It's sweet to see these two guys match up at this point. I feel like they probably maybe even played each other back in, like, 2005 or something when Drew Brees was on the Chargers. But I'm going to go with the Bucks in this one. I do have the Bucks representing the NFC in the Super Bowl for me. And it's kind of a lot of things Richard said. I mean, yeah, they've lost twice, and one of those losses was really bad to the Saints. But it's playoff time now. They've been playing very good football recently. Obviously, last week was a little bit scary, but they get a couple defensive guys back. It's gonna be interesting. But like Richard said, the Saints find a way to fuck it up every single year, so they're gonna do it again. We'll see what it is. I mean, Drew Brees has put up numbers since he came back from the broken ribs and punctured lung and all that. But we'll see if they can get pressure to him, if he gets the ball off so quick. But we'll have to see how it goes. I mean,
all right, boys.
I just don't want the Saints to win.
You ready?
I'm not picking for the Saints.
Saints are going to win. You want me to tell you why?
No.
All right, I'll tell you why. Brady's going to fuck it up. Here's the deal. 5 out of the 6 teams that won last week led the game in rushing, led the game in the turnover battle. The Buccaneers are going to turn the ball over more, and the Saints have a better rushing attack. I also believe the Saints have a better defense. This may be potentially Drew Brees' last game. Yes, the Saints have fucked it up plenty of times, but I don't think they fuck it up this time. They owned the Bucs this entire season. I don't think that's a fluke. When you go back and look at the statistics in that game, it's not a fluke. Tom Brady will struggle in this game. He's had an incredible last 5 to 6 games, but he will not have as good of a game as he had the last 5 to 6 games. Book it right now. Go ahead, Chu.
Tony Toe Taps is coming out, and he's dancing.
I was just going to talk
Mr.
about
Big
it.
Chest. MBC is going to come out and dance. You look at his last 4 weeks, he's got 5 tutties. He's absolutely eaten. He's doing what he does. Everyone forgot about him. He was an afterthought, just like that guy Gronk, who's been eaten in the second half of the year. They're going to dance. You got Mike Evans. You got Chris Godwin. Yes, Marshawn Lattimore has shut down Mike Evans since they've matched up in the past few years. But guess what? They got 5 different options on that offense, and they're going to torch.
Yeah,
Drew Brees, 2
and
picks.
Also, last time they played in the 38-3 game was Antonio Brown's first game. I mean, he's. I was just going to touch on him before Chu did too. Like, he's just such a huge luxury to have out there. Like, they had the Gronk all last week, literally just pass blocking. Like, one of the better tight end offensive options ever, and they have the luxury to have him just pass blocking, just blocking when they have so many good options out there. And obviously, he's a threat for plays, but like, the luxury of having Mike Evans, Godwin, and Antonio Brown out there, and Gronk as a safety blanket, like, it's not. He played in the last Saints game and they got blown out, so I'm not 100% going off that, but I think Antonio Brown has.
Yeah, dude, ton of great weapons for Brady. Probably the best set of weapons he's ever had in his entire career.
Yeah.
Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, Manuel Sanders, Jared Cook, not bad either. It's going to come down to Brees versus Brady. That's what it's going to be. And it's been like that before when we've seen these quarterbacks. And Brees have been shaky, obviously, coming off ribs. And Tom Brady has looked great over the past 5-6 games. So, obviously, my take sounds kind of crazy. But let's just wait and see.
Doesn't sound crazy.
I think the Saints could potentially make this one a little bit scary.
I hope we see them both have a good game. I hope it's not the team that loses on their quarterback throwing two bad picks, and that's what loses the game.
That's what it's going to be.
But I hope it's like a tops one pick or no pick game where these guys are just dueling it out, because that would be great to watch.
Yeah, I agree, but you're going to have a couple picks from one of these guys.
I'm sure.
I think it's going to be
sure.
Brady. We'll get out of here on this, and then I know Chewy's going to want to maybe touch a little bit on maybe the Broncos, Mets, anything that he had. You can stick around if you want, though, Rich, but if you got to go, no problem.
Yeah.
Dougie P gets fired. I talked about that a little bit on my own the other day. I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on the head coaching vacancies, if you could rank them. I went through and I ranked them myself, and to be honest, I had them ranked like this. I had the Chargers at the one. I was flipping between Jags and Texans at two. I think the Jags will be the two. Just for me, and a lot of reports of Urban Meyer going there. I think that's really weird just because he's first-time NFL head coach, old, not going to be able to be there for a long time. But he could potentially build him up right before he's got to go. Always a wide-open division, so we'll see if he gets the job. But then I would put the Texans third, and then after that it gets pretty ugly, right? I mean, you got the Lions, which I think is lower than the Jets because they got a little bit more with the number two pick, so I'd probably have the Jets at four. I think the Eagles are the worst job. They got no cap space. They got a lot of misses on draft picks. They got a mess with the quarterback situation, and you got an owner there that, or I'm sorry, a GM there that's very power hungry. So I just wanted to see what you guys had for these, or just talk about them real quick, if you had anything for the head coaching vacancies.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly forgot about the Chargers. That's definitely the number one spot. You look at a young stud quarterback that they have, a very good defense, good, you know, weapons on the offense. That's such an attractive job, and I agree with you with number two being Jacksonville. I believe they're trying to finalize the Urban Meyer deal, which is exciting to see. This is a dude who's 187-32 in his coaching career at college. He coached at Bowling Green State, Utah, with Alex Smith, was the first ever BCS buster.
He has the second best record to Nick Saban. He hasn't coached in 3 years.
Yep. He's 12-3 record in bowl games. I think this is a huge hire for Jacksonville.
Yep.
He's shown he can build programs and build them pretty fast. Obviously, college is different than the NFL, but you're coming into a place with a ton of draft picks, couple decent pieces on the team already in skill positions and defenders, but you're going to get this kid Trevor Lawrence. You got a ton of cap space to go out and sign guys, and you can actually build something, so it's exciting to see. One note I do want to make, though, is he's not as old as you think he is, but the reason he retired is because of health issues. First in Florida and then Ohio State.
So yeah.
Coming back and doing a rah-rah sport like football, I hope he's healthy and he's good enough to coach because he's a fantastic coach, but see how it goes. And then as far as the Eagles go, it's tough when you have a power-hungry GM like that. I don't know. It's kind of an ugly situation. I don't know. The more I think about it, I think Roseman should have gone along with Doug Peterson. I wish Peterson could have been salvaged a little bit, but he did ruin the ties with this quarterback, and that's your franchise guy that you're not going to be able to trade. So it's an ugly situation. Jets are ugly. And then the Lions are ugly, too. I mean,
yeah,
those bottom three teams.
The one I was forgetting was the Falcons, which I don't think is much better. You got Matt Ryan under contract and Julio Jones on the trade rumors, but it's looking like a total rebuild there, too.
For sure, but there are a couple pieces there, too. There's different tiers to it, and those are all in the bottom tier as teams go.
What do you got, Rich?
I agree with the top two. I think not much to say for the Chargers. They're the easy number one. I didn't know you guys would have Jacksonville as number two, but we're all in agreement there. I agree with everything you guys said. I think my hot take maybe...
Well, here's the thing with Jacksonville, bro. They got 11 picks in the draft, including double ones and double twos. They'll get Lawrence probably if they take him number one. They got projected nearly $100 million in cap space, and when you look at the young players on their roster, we know what James Robinson does. We talked about him as undrafted running back. They got LaVisca Chenault, Chark, C.J. Henderson,
Josh Allen,
Chasson. They got a good group of young core players, so I think that's why you can have a quick rebuild there if you bring in a guy with some pedigree that he might not be able to be there long, but he has
bring
pedigree.
Bring a little juice, bring a little moxie to a team that's never really had it.
So that's why I have them. I have two.
Well, that would bring me to the next thing I was going to say. What makes them number two is what I think would make maybe my hot take, maybe the Texans literally last jobs I would want after all of these, because the Jacksonville Jaguars, you're coming in, you're controlling your own destiny. You're making, you got like a lot of those new picks. Like, you're not, maybe you're not the one making the picks as the coach, but you guys have a lot of picks, a lot of young talent coming in. If you're a GM or a coach coming into the Texans, like, you're literally just at the liberty of Deshaun Watson. If he decides to get traded, we've heard, I don't know if you guys heard this, I've heard some stuff saying like Deshaun Watson could make their life hell, and how they like don't understand all the movements going on and they're not open to it. And like basically saying that like Deshaun Watson could make players want to go there even less by talking if he wanted
to. Bro, the whole Deshaun Watson thing is a debacle now with the Andre Johnson tweet. Like, yeah, it's all fucking mess down there. It went from being two on mine to, or three down to the last one probably, because if Deshaun Watson isn't there, no doubt about it. But I do think there's a case for the Eagles being down there at the bottom as well. Sorry, Dukes, but go ahead.
Yeah, there is. I think there's a – you're coming in there, and maybe your first move, whether you like it or not, while you're in there, coach, GM, whatever it is Deshaun Watson getting traded, and all the fans just immediately hating the team, hating you if you're the GM, hating the coach because you're putting a bad product out there, and there's not much you can really do about it.
I agree.
And that, and like you said, that same scenario exists for maybe the Jets, maybe the Eagles, and some of the other teams.
Yep. I think
the
Falcons, Texas, Lions,
like,
absolutely.
There's no light at the end of the tunnel unless you're getting like five first-round picks and you're able to do a nice rebuild.
For sure. I mean, keep an eye out for Brian Daboll, Jason Garrett, potentially Arthur Smith, Robert Saleh, hot name, Eric Bieniemy, and Joe Brady. Talks to Kellen Moore. I mean, we'll see. The coaching carousel is still wide open. Matt Nagy and GM Ryan Pace are retaining their jobs, so there's no openings in Chicago. Not so sure how many more openings are going to come left. I thought it was interesting, just with some of the coaching carousel out of that. The Seahawks fired offensive coordinator Brian Schottenheimer, basically citing philosophical differences between him and head coach Pete Carroll. Thought that was interesting. A little bit of a scapegoat there with the offense falling off a cliff, but we'll see if they'll be able to right that ship. Hopefully we'll start filling some of these soon. Chew, you got anything before we get out of here?
Yeah, I got a couple MLB notes.
Let's get it.
As always. Let's see. Top closer on the market, Liam Hendricks, he signed a 3-year deal.
Saw that.
$54 million with the Chicago White Sox. That's a huge move for them to bolster their bullpen, get another right-handed arm in there. It's really interesting. He actually is setting the deal for the highest average annual value, most money per year by a reliever at, what is that, $18 million? So it's absolutely crazy to see that he could get that. This is a guy who's been DFA'd three times in his career, but he's kind of figured it out.
Yeah.
He scrapped a few pitches and went with what worked well for him, which is a fastball and a slider. And he's an Australian psycho, and it's kind of cool. I was watching an interview of him the other day, and he's got a great voice, great demeanor, great mentality about stuff. So I'm excited to see what he does on the South Side. And then as far as everything else goes, it's been slow. I think there's still 80% of free agents that haven't signed yet, and we're a month from free agency, so it just kind of shows how weird it's been with contracts. We talked about this in previous years. But what I'm excited for tomorrow is international free agency signing period starts. So this is where you see teams go out and sign guys from places like Venezuela, Dominican Republic, Cuba. And it's where you get a lot of superstars. This is where we get guys like Ronald Acuna Jr., Tatis Jr., Juan Soto, Gleyber Torres, Eloy Jimenez, Luis Robert, Wander Franco, Ronnie Mauricio.
Love it.
Yankees have this new superstar kid who's like 17, Jason Dominguez. He looks like he's unreal. So excited to see who signs, where they sign. This is a life-changing moment for a lot of guys. Most of these guys come from nothing, and they're signing million-dollar deals. So it's pretty cool. I'm excited for all of them. And then I did see that a 1952 rookie Mickey Mantle card sold for $5.2 million yesterday, breaking the Mike Trout record of 4-point-something. I forget it was. But it's one of 9 cards still in existence, and it's in the best quality. And someone purchased that thing for $5.2 million. So pretty nuts, huh? Hold on to your sports card. See if they're worth something in the future.
That's actually funny, because we were going through cleaning up a bunch downstairs, and my dad has like a whole fucking rack of baseball cards. I need to show you it, by the way.
Wow.
It's literally unreal. So, yeah, I'm going to make sure I show you that. Rich, you got anything else before we get out of here?
Oh, man. Unfortunately, my Knicks have looked a little tough. I mean, it's what I said on here. They got off to a unrealistic hot start, which is what they've done in past years. And I don't think they're the same, like, bad team they've been in past years. You could see they're just playing different, have more fight. Julius Randle looks better. Tibbs is clearly a better coach than Fitz was.
Yeah.
But I think they were getting a little bit overhyped just from a hot start. Like, R.J. Barrett's leading the league in minutes per game right now. Like, that's fine. He's a young guy. It is what it is. But, like, Julius Randle's also top five. Like, Elfrid Payton's up there in minutes. Like, Tibbs just runs his starters into the ground, and my only question with him is, so far, even though I'm really happy with most of it, like, is the team already shot and tired because they're playing 48 minutes a game, basically? Maybe. I don't know, but Julius Randle has looked a little more beat up these first few games than he did the first 10, so he might need to work on the rotation a little bit. I'm still happy the Knicks have looked better than in past years, but four tough games for them in a row now.
I mean, they were over 500 in January. Last year, it took them 25 games to get five wins. There's some bright spots to look at here for sure. I mean, they definitely, I think they've fallen off a cliff now, lost four straight, maybe five. We can see if they could turn the ship. There was a bunch of back-to-backs. I think the back-to-backs for young teams like that, trying to get things kind of mesh in with a new coach, are definitely going to be crucial in terms of standings when you're potentially dropping a couple back-to-backs. I mean, you lose four straight pretty quick, or you win four straight pretty quick. It changes the standings a little bit really quick. So we saw that recently with the Knicks. I did want to kind of ask you about that. Like, just with everything going on with Brooklyn, you know, obviously it's been tough being a Knicks guy. This obviously can't help with Brooklyn literally being one of the worst in terms of NBA ratings going back two decades, basically the shadow of the Knicks franchise for the longest time. Then obviously the Knicks have been a struggle for the past decade at least, or maybe two.
Yeah.
But clearly now they're going to be very highly rated, a must watch. That's obviously going to be competing in the East probably a lot sooner than the Knicks.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, The thing with the Knicks is, like, their front court's actually really good. Like, Mitchell Robinson, great young piece. Julius Randle playing great. RJ Barrett should be out there a lot of minutes. Perfect. Their starting backcourt last game was Elfrid Payton and Austin Rivers, and they combined for 3 of 22 shooting. And, like, I like Austin Rivers, honestly. He's had some good games, but, like, Elfrid Payton can't be the starting point guard on a good team. He's a great playmaker. He's like a poor man's Ricky Rubio. Like, he's good is like a definition of what a point guard is, but like, he's not what you need in the NBA as a point guard. Knicks need shooting. It will be a help when they get Alec Burks back. He's been a high usage, good shooting guy for them, good shooting guy in the past, but Knicks just need another guard pretty bad. Like, I'm not suggesting they trade for Mike Conley. I'd actually be upset if they did. The contract's too big, but just a guy like that, like a guy that's like been around, like a reliable point guard, like not even these exact guys, like a Lowry, Conley, like just a good point guard would help this team a lot, like mature a little bit, I think. And they've never had that. And like, Quickly will be be a good point guard going forward. But I think they need like a veteran, good point guard presence. And I don't know who that is, but I hope they bring in someone.
No, I agree.
I just got two more baseball nuggets that I forgot to get in, but yep. I do want to get in now. Who knows, maybe by the next time we talk, Fernando Tatis could have signed a mega deal. They're in talks to maybe sign them to a 10-year, $320 million deal, somewhere around there.
Love that.
Which is crazy. And then also, it happened about a half hour ago while we were on here, but a little bit of a smats bomb for baseball. Theo Epstein is actually going to work for the commissioner's office, and he is one step closer to eventually probably being the commissioner of baseball.
Wow.
Which is great. We can get Manfred out of there, that clown, and we can get a guy like Theo in who actually cares about the game.
That's unreal. That's an unreal smats bomb.
Absolutely.
Love that you brought it. Yeah, it's dope. Just real quick before we get out of here on my regards. Mark,
I got birthdays too.
Yep. I think it's Drew Brees' birthday. Mark your calendars. March 3rd. That's when the Nets are going to take on the Rockets in Houston. Make sure you guys marked it. That's the day before the first regular season cutoff for the NBA, too. So make sure you guys watch that. I'm sure we will. And just, I started the pod a little bit with this. I didn't talk about it. I don't need to talk about it, but I just need to mention this. So that man, Trumpy, I did get my stimulus check, which was dope. Went out to the mailbox this morning and got my stimulus check. That really helps me out. I've been struggling with the funds and the food. But he was now the first president in U.S. history to be impeached twice. 232 to 197 was the vote. For a second time, the man was impeached. Fucking idiot. That's all I have to say. That's literally all I have to say.
Yeah.
You got birthdays?
I do.
Let's do it.
All right.
Fuck that guy.
Okay. Yeah, no, that guy sucks, but these birthdays are way cooler than anything he's ever done. Starting it off, we have, hopefully he calls a good game this weekend. We'll see how it goes. I know Rich and I are rooting for him. You're rooting for the Saints, but Byron Leftwich.
Love birthday. It.
Yep. Then I'm going to switch to baseball. We only got four names today. It's not huge, but, you know, it is what it is. We have former Mets first-round pick, Mike Pelfrey, thinking of different pitchers here. Mike Pelfrey, we had him mid-2000s, early 2010s. Wasn't great. Sam Huff, catching prospect for the Rangers. I think this kid's going to be pretty good. It's always fun when you see catchers come along that can hit. Yep. A lot of them are defensive-based. This kid can swing it, so hopefully he has a good career. And then the last one, I think he's on the all-name team. He's a professional golfer, or he was back in the day. But let's give it up to Gibby Gilbert.
Gibby Gilbert.
Yeah, Gibby Gilbert. I believe he played in the Masters in 1980, so we'll have to check that. Happy birthday to you, Gibby.
Hey, Gibby. Hey, Gibby. Hey, guys, you can check out Stephen A's Smith new show. It's called Stephen A's World. They're giving relationship advice. And here's the thing I thought was real funny about that. I got to fucking subscribe $5.99 to watch him play, have a show now and hear my man talk. And he's going to give fucking relationship advice on a Friday. Motherfucker's been single his whole life. What do I need relationship advice from Stephen A for? He's openly been saying how he's single his whole life and going to be single his whole life. So what, you're going to give me advice to be single my whole fucking life? Probably am going to be because I'm a fucking gas bagger like you. But I did need to get into the fact that you need to subscribe to see some of this shit on ESPN. Like, bro, I don't even have a subscription up for our shit. Like, bro, it'd be nice for somebody, I was saying the other day, like, yeah, give me $5 or whatever it is. Every once in a while I can support the bros. Now I got to fucking subscribe to ESPN, who's obviously making, what, millions of dollars, and fucking this dude's on like a $10 million contract, $5.99 a month. Fuck that. I don't even want to watch his shit. Just need to get out of here on that, too.
They have Stephen A enough on ESPN, ESPN2, every single network on the computer and all that. $5.99 you can get your Stephen A. Smith. Don't pay the $5.99 for ESPN Plus. Fucking bullshit. Bogus.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
No.
That's such bullshit. All right, Rich. What's good? You around later? Hit some hoops. We had a tough one last night. You weren't there. We had Dukes, and Chewy said he's probably never playing again, just like he said he's probably never potting again. That turned out to be false. Hopefully this turns out to be false with the NBA prediction, the 2K prediction.
Chew just spews lies.
I did want to say, no, PS5 is still fucking pissing me off, though.
While we were on here, it was reported the Houston's asking price for Miami for Harden was Hero, Robinson, Nunn, 2 first-round picks, 4 pick swaps, Miami declined. And their offer for the Celtics was Harden for Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, and multiple first-round picks, and the Celtics declined. I would say that was good declines on both of those teams' moves, probably. The Heat one could have worked, but the Celtics, I think that would have been a really, really bad trade.
There's nothing out on the Sixers?
I didn't see. There was just a report on the Sixers saying, where'd it go? An Eastern Conference executive had some strong words for Ben Simmons. Quote, Ben Simmons has not improved in a single area of his game at all since his first day coming into the league. He's the same player today as he was his rookie year, and teams had figured him out in the playoff, which is why his team won't go far and teams aren't interested as they should be in trading for him.
I saw that. That was my whole knock on Ben Simmons, really, bro. Like, he just hasn't improved at all. And I saw a really interesting one where it was like LaMelo Ball has improved more in 10 games than Ben Simmons has in 4 seasons or whatever it was, or 3 seasons, whatever it was. It's kind of like valid where you see this man go out there the first game and look like he's, you know, got a little deer in the headlights or whatever. He still can ball. And by 10 games in, I mean, fuck, this guy's going way up in the rankings of tiers in DraftKings, so.
To an extent, I agree with that, but at the same time, it's a lot easier to show improvements over, like, your first game to your 10th game. Like, I don't have Ben Simmons' numbers up, too. He could have got better in those first few games. And also, LaMelo Ball has just been getting, like, they started him off with, like, 18 minutes a game, and in his first 12 games have launched him up to, like, 32, 33. So, like, I don't disagree with that. LaMelo's looked great. He was my rookie of the year choice, but I think it's a little unfair to compare it to some dude's first 10 games where, like, yeah, he's still learning and improving. But I agree. Ben Simmons, I think he's become a better defender and playmaker, so I don't think that's entirely true. But he looks very similar to how he did in his first year, I would argue that.
No, I mean, he doesn't look any better. Go ahead, Chu.
I was just going to say, Ben Simmons is the only player in the league that we celebrate when he hits a three-pointer. Like, he's a make-a-wish kid. So, like, congratulations to him. And he really, hasn't shown any improvement. He's a great defender, great passer, big body. But I forget which one of you said it. I was out of the room. But teams have figured it out, especially come playoff time. And you got to adapt your game and figure something out. I hope he starts hitting more jumpers. But seriously, I mean...
My only thing with him has always been, if you surround him with a team like the Bucks surrounded Giannis, he probably is a much better player. If he's surrounded with shooters and his second best player isn't a big guy,
in the middle with you, definitely.
But I agree that he should look better by now.
For sure.
Just a quick reminder, boys, that Biden won the election like 6 times. Trump is impeached twice, and Harden still has 0 rings. Did you guys check out the Instagram post today, all the way post number 10?
No.
How elite is that, Trey? Just before we get out of here, like, if I brought that out, I'm like, yeah, boys, come over. I'm having a get together. We'll watch the games. And I just walk out with this Trey. How fucking pumped would you be? Scale of 1 to 10.
I would be a absolute 0. And I thought it was going to look a lot better than that.
0? Yeah,
0.
Wow. Rich says 0 on a scale of 1 to 10. Chew. Scale of 1 to 10.
I would be going to the market about 5 minutes away, and I'd be getting a few things to add, and we'd make this a 10. But right now, I'm looking at that. That's about
like a 4. I would say thank you for the Capri Sun and touch nothing else on
that.
No,
I would eat the Reese's.
All right, yeah, you're shitting on Reese's and Capri Sun, and you're not down for a Lunchable? All right, bro, you're fucking up.
Do you see how slimy that ham is? Zoom in on that. Do you see how slimy that is?
I don't want your unwrapped Reese's.
I prefer the ham out of the Lunchable before the cheese for sure, but I will say the meat in the Lunchables is not great, but you can get, like, nacho Lunchables or something, like... I'm just more talking about Lunchables here.
Can we do the pizzas?
I don't think I've ever had Lunchables in my life, and those look nasty.
Oh, this kid.
You never had the Lunchable pizza?
This kid. No wonder why he's so...
I get him when I go to the grocery store every time.
Fucking Richie meatballs.
Shut up, meatballs.
Meatballs. Yeah, Rich, it was LaMelo Ball's improved in 10 games than Ben Simmons has in 4 seasons. I think it's an interesting argument with him not really improving at all, really, if you look at it. It's just like the same guy. It's not that he's not a good player. He just hasn't improved, clearly. And I do think it's interesting to see how much James Harden will be scoring. Let's get out of here on this, Rich. James Harden, he scored 20 or less for the 4th straight game. We obviously talked about the trade on the jump. Let's end on this. His longest streak since 2011-2012, his final year in OKC, at 20 points or less, Rich. You see him, obviously... potentially averaging over 20, or do you see him right at 20 or up to 30 where he was, or what's good? Where do you see this dude?
Closer to 30 than 20, over 25 if I had to guess, mainly because they said there's no time.
Even with Kyrie there, if he's back?
Kyrie there, I'd say probably like right around at 25. Without him, definitely above 25. I just think the team if you don't include KD and Kyrie, who's the next scoring option on this team? Dinwiddie's not here, LeVert's not here. Jared Allen's gone. Like, is it DeAndre Jordan? Is it Bruce Brown? Is it TLC? Like, who's the next scoring option?
Jeff Green? Literally Jeff Green.
They're going to be taking a lot of shots. And without Kyrie there, I would guess Kyrie misses at least another week.
Yeah.
James Harden and Durant are going to be hawking some shots.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't see him getting, like, it'll just be interesting, though. Here's the thing. Who's taking the last shot on that team? If there has to be a last shot taken, Durant, right?
I think that's...
What's the deal?
It's the same thing with the Warriors. Like, there's not an answer. Like, it's whoever's open. Like, you have 3 guys who could take the last shot for you. Ideally, if you're making me pick, like, yes, I'd put the ball in Kevin Durant's hands.
2014 MVP, 2-time finals MVP, 10-time All-Star, 9-time All-NBA is Durant. Kyrie, 2016 NBA champion, 6-time All-Star, 2-time All-NBA. I talked about... 3 straight scoring titles for not only Durant, but Harden as well. 2018 MVP, 8-time All-Star, 7-time All-NBA. I mean, they're stacked, but I don't think they're going to be good defensively. And I think it'll be one of these things where they'll be great. They'll have a great record and be probably really good in the regular season, if not first, up there at the top, but I think defensively come playoff time, that's where they're going to struggle for sure. Loss of Jared Allen, Caris LeVert, their best wing defender. Now with Spencer Dinwiddie probably. I don't know. Torian Prince, I thought, was an underrated defender as well. Like, they literally got rid of, like, all their defenders. James Harden's going to lock up fucking Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum. Is that what you're telling me? I mean, he's going to have to.
No. They're going to switch everything on defense. I mean, granted, you still have to guard the guy when switches aren't happening. So, yeah, there are going to be times where James Harden's guarding Jaylen Brown. I mean, that's not the – James Harden is not the defender people make him out to be, like, one-on-one positional defender. The concern would be more – Kyrie Irving one-on-one on some of those guys, and then who's the other guy out there besides DeAndre Jordan? Like, they could throw – I guess it'll be Bruce Brown if I had to guess, but he's a guard too, so that's tough. Maybe Jeff Green. Like, this is why I didn't like the move. I get why they did it with Dinwiddie not there and Kyrie in question, but I liked your team better, obviously, when you had Dinwiddie, LeVert, Allen, and a lot of depth, and they got rid of that depth, so it was a big risk. I don't love the trade.
Yeah, it is risky. High risk, high reward probably, but we'll see. All right, then we'll leave on this then. I've said it like about five times, but you're shitting on my sandwiches. If you had to make your sandwich with the same two meats and one cheese for the rest of your life, I saw this, answer the internet, what would you choose? You're shitting on my sandwiches and Lunchables. So you could pick two meats and one cheese for the rest of your life on a sandwich. What do you got?
Are the two meats on the same sandwich, or can I eat the, like, if I picked ham and these aren't my picks, but if I picked ham and turkey, could I have a ham sandwich some days and a turkey sandwich some days?
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Together.
Yep, I'll give you that.
So mine would be like a chicken cutlet or some kind of chicken, because there's so many different things I could do with chicken as my meat. Like, you could just make, you know, whether it's chicken pesto, a chicken cutlet, chicken parm, you could do a million different things with chicken.
All right.
So I would do chicken. And I'd probably go like a honey roasted ham type thing.
Yeah.
I really like pepperoni, but I don't just want a pepperoni sandwich.
What type of cheese?
Pepper jack cheese.
What do you got you?
See, honestly, I feel like we kind of did the same thing. I guess since we're picking like lunch meat, it wouldn't be chicken cutlet.
Yeah, like you're fucking. Yeah, what the fuck,
like,
is that?
Like sliced chicken breast where you could make.
You said kind of meat for a sandwich.
That's
chicken
true.
Is a meat for a sandwich. Is it deli meats?
No, it's meat for a sandwich. He's right.
Yeah,
that's what
yeah,
I
but
said.
I'm just like adjusting it here.
You can
like,
have a chicken cutlet sandwich. He's
okay.
Right.
Okay, yeah. No, that's honestly probably exactly what I would do.
Chicken cutlet sandwich and honey
yeah,
and
like
ham.
Sliced chicken, so you, yeah.
I would do like a buffalo chicken deli meat, probably.
Yeah, I would do the same thing except like roasted chicken where it's thin sliced and then you could add whatever you want. Pepper jack cheese for sure.
Wow. Pepper jack cheese.
Pepper jack cheese is elite.
Big pepper jack cheese guys over here.
Yeah. And I guess like, yeah, ham.
I would definitely go pepperoni and buffalo turkey breast, and I'd go Swiss cheese.
Yeah, I would have gone the pepperoni, but on the days where I want something different from the chicken, I don't want to eat a straight pepperoni sandwich. I like pepperoni
true.
With another meat.
Me too. So I'll just go pepperoni and turkey and Swiss my entire life. I'm cool with it.
True.
All right, boys. Hopefully we'll link up later. Much love. Thanks for coming on, Rich.
Peace, boys. Good pod.
See
adios,
you, kid.
Friendos.
Chewy. All right. Dropping shit, breaking shit. Dude, see, you want to know why you're dropping shit and breaking shit and can't feel your legs? Because you didn't bring any beers over today. Much love to my dude Chew coming through. Rich coming through. Got through the NBA trade, which was had me losing some sleep last night. Fired up to talk about it with the boys. Fired up for a divisional football weekend. 8 teams left, 4 remaining after this week. See how the picks turn out after a 4-2 from me and Rich last week. 3-3 from Chew. Duke didn't have picks in, but I got his picks in for this week. We'll see who comes out on top. Probably with a overreaction Monday, hopefully. Got some stuff to do Tuesday. But until next time, hope everyone stays safe. Hope everyone enjoys them sports. Much love for everyone. Showing any support to the podcast at this time means a lot to me. A lot going on, trying to get back into the swing of things. Before the next thing I know, it's spring, which shit'll be here before you know it. All right. That's all I had for the airwaves today. Appreciate all listening, as always. And as always, it's still no shame what I have to say. Just a man with a nickname. Till next time, everybody. Peace and love. Stay safe out there. Listen to Seggy Station.